Luther Snell could not believe his luck. Not only had he found Chester Sinclair, who was going to make him a rich man, but he had gotten rid of his archenemy preacher, too. And grabbing that pretty redheaded gal so he and the boys could have some fun with her was a real bonus. He knew that several of his men were right behind him. He waved them forward, and Euchre, Baldy, Vickery, and the Dimmock cousins swept around him and surrounded the startled Sinclair and Faith as they sat on an Indian pony.
Get him out of here! Don't let anything happen to Sinclair!
The others leveled pistols at Sinclair and Faith.
You heard what he said? Come on! We gotta get out of the way of that fire!
There wasn't any time to waste. The flames were closing in with breathtaking speed. Snell cast a glance at the motionless forms of Preacher and the engine woman. They hadn't moved since the dying horse had thrown them. Snell would have liked to kill Preacher slowly and painfully, but he supposed he'd just have to settle for knowing the Preacher would burn to death. He wheeled his horse around and followed the others as the fire roared closer. Flames were leaping a good 50 feet into the air as they greedily gobbled up the prairie. Snell and the others were out of sight before Preacher stirred. He lifted his head and shook groggily. The fire was close enough now that he could feel its heat on his face. Preacher pushed himself onto his hands and knees, then reeled to his feet. His head spun dizzily for a second or two before settling down. He looked around, grimly taking stock of the situation. His horse was dead. Faith and Sinclair were gone, as was Snell. The smoke was so thick that he couldn't see very far. But nothing was moving in his line of sight except the racing flames anyway. The Sioux woman he had tried to help lay close by, unconscious. It looked like he wasn't going to be able to save her after all. He wasn't even going to be able to save himself. There was no way he could outrun the flames on foot.
Preacher!
A tall, lean figure came stumbling out of the smoke leading a horse.
Wingate!
Preacher sprang forward as Wingate started to fall, and he caught him. He caught the horse's reins, too. When his hand touched the back of Wingate's buckskin shirt, he realized that it was soaked with blood.
What the hell are you doing here? Followed Snell. Bastard shot me in the back, so I couldn't tell about him kidnapping Sinclair.
You mean Willard Carlin?
No. Sinclair. Turns out he's a hell of a lot richer than Carlin. If Snell's got him, he'll probably kill him, and the girl too, sooner or later.
Well, let's get you in the saddle.
No need. I ain't gonna make it. You get on this horse. Take that squaw. Get out of here.
Preacher eased Wingate to the ground as blood trickled from the corners of the trapper's mouth.
Me dying is just one more reason for you to settle the score with Snell. Find Lieutenant Corrigan. Go after Snell.
Lieutenant Corrigan? Who the hell's Lieutenant Corrigan? Wingate? Wingate?
But Wingate was already gone. Preacher realized there must have been a lot going on that he hadn't known about. But it simply didn't matter right now. Not with the fire closing in so rapidly. Preacher lowered Wingate the rest of the way to the ground and turned swiftly to the engine room. He didn't say anything. He just grabbed her and practically threw her onto the horse Wingate had brought with him. Sudden movement revived the woman.
Hold on tight. Yeah!
Faith turned her head to Chester as they galloped away from the fire, surrounded by Snell and his men.
Chester! Where are they taking us?
I don't know!
What do they want from us?
I have no idea, Faith! They murdered Preacher and that poor woman by leaving them there, though!
Faith looked back over her left shoulder and saw that they were definitely getting clear of the fire now.
Good Lord! Soldiers!
Chester's sudden exclamation made Faith look forward again. and she was shocked to see several soldiers clad in blue and red uniforms riding toward her. Relief washed through her. One of the men, an officer, to judge by the gold braid on his uniform, held up a hand in greeting.
Mr. Snell, there you are. And you've rescued the prisoners.
That's right. Seen any more crows?
I believe most of them are dead, and the ones who aren't are no longer a threat to us. They've all fled from that terrible fire.
You lose any men?
Unfortunately, yes. These are all the troops that remain in my command.
This is all of you, huh? Well, hell, that's convenient. All right, boys, now! Don't worry, folks. No harm's gonna come to you. You're worth a whole hell of a lot to me. Well, you are anyway, Sinclair.
Me?
Yeah. You don't know it yet, but you're a rich man. And you're gonna make me and all my friends rich, too.
You're insane!
Nope. Come on, we'll circle around to the south of what that fire burned and head for St. Louis. When we get there, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Whatever mad plan you have, I won't cooperate with you, Snell.
Oh, I reckon you will.
Snell reached out and touched Faith's hair, curling some of it around one of his fingers.
That is, if you don't want to see this pretty little gal suffer more than she ever would have in the hands of them Injuns.
Chester!
All right, damn you. Whatever you want, just don't hurt her.
I figured you'd come around to my way of thinking. Let's get moving. We got a long way to go, but when we get there, boys, we'll all be rich.
Preacher felt like the whole left side of his body was cooked good and proper by the time he and the engine woman got clear of the fire. As they galloped past the western edge of the blaze, the flames were less than 20 yards away. The fire roared on by behind him. Preacher gradually slowed the horse to a walk. He looked around, hoping to see some more survivors.
Preacher! Preacher!
Preacher turned to see Rip Giddens, Willard Carling, and Jasper Hodge riding toward him. The faces of all three men were grimy from the smoke, and their clothes were stained with blood in various places. But they were alive. None of them seemed to be badly wounded.
Lord, it's good to see that you made it out. Have you run into Panther?
I was hoping he was with you boys.
No, I ain't seen any sign of him. Damn it, I reckon he didn't make it.
How about you two?
We're fine. Did you find Faith and Chester?
I saw them, but they ain't with me.
Oh, no. Oh, dear Lord, no.
No, I don't know that they're dead. Fact is, there's a good chance they're not. But if they're not, then Luther Snell's got them.
Snell? What's he doing up here?
At one time, he was after Willard here, you recollect. Now it looks like he kidnapped Sinclair because old Chester's really rich.
What? Chester doesn't have any money except for what I pay him, and Lord knows that's not much.
Look, I'm just going by what I heard. Maybe it was wrong, and Snell figured if he couldn't grab Willard, he'd get his sister instead.
I'll pay any amount to get her back safely.
Could be that's what Snell's counting on.
Well, we have to find them. What are we doing here? Let's start looking.
Just a minute. Where are the Sioux prisoners who got away?
Over that way. I don't know if they all got out of the fire or not, but there's more than a dozen of them.
Sensing the urgency of the situation, the engine woman atop the horse didn't need further persuasion. She slid down from the horse, caught hold of Preacher's hand for a moment, and pressed it in gratitude. Then she started walking in a swift, steady pace after the others from her tribe who'd been carried off by the crows. The men quickly rode along the north path to the fire.
You look like you've been roasted on a spit and somebody forgot to turn you.
Yeah, I'd be roasted clean through if it wasn't for Wingate.
Wingate? I didn't know he was anywhere in these parts.
Neither did I.
He didn't make it out neither, did he?
No. Snell shot him before he died, though. Wingate told me about Sinclair really being a rich man. He said something about a Lieutenant Corrigan, too.
Who? My God, I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm a mite puzzled by it all, too. But I reckon we can boil it down to where it's simple. And more than likely, Snell's got Miss Faith and Sinclair, and for whatever reason is holding him prisoner. But either way, it's long past time I found that son of a bitch and killed him.
Now that the fire had moved well north of where they were, leaving behind a scorched and blackened plain, Preacher and the other three men waited a short time for the ground to cool, then rode across the devastation. backtrack into the spot where he had encountered Faith Carling, Chester Sinclair, and Luther Snell. The fact that all the grass had been burned off made it easier to follow the tracks left by the mounts of Snell and his men. The trail led northwestward out of the charred path of the flames. Less than half an hour after they started following it, Preacher spotted something up ahead.
Those are saddled horses roaming around. Let's see if we can figure out where they came from.
Preacher rode ahead quickly, with Rip, Carling, and Hodge doing their best to keep up. When Preacher came closer, he could tell that the loose horses he had seen were wearing military saddles. That tied in with Wingate's comment about a lieutenant named Corrigan.
Up ahead! There's some folks!
The four men galloped on. Preacher saw a few men sitting on the ground, while others were stretched out motionless on the prairie. They wore red and blue uniforms. Some of the red came from the bloodstains on those uniforms. One of the men stood up unsteadily with his right hand clutching his left arm, which hung limp and useless at his side. The preacher came closer and saw the gold braid on the man's uniform that signified he was an officer.
Lieutenant Corrigan?
Do you know me?
Wingate told me about you. I'm Preacher.
Preacher? I've heard of you. And these men are...
Rip Giddens, Willard Carling, Jasper Hodge.
Mr. Carling, thank God you're alive, sir, if not exactly unharmed.
Don't worry about me. Have you seen my sister?
Yes, sir. She was with Mr. Sinclair. They were prisoners of a man called Snell.
We know about Snell. What happened to you fellas?
Snell and his men attacked us. We thought we were all on the same side, but they took us by surprise and cut us down. Everyone was killed except for myself and two of my men.
You trusted Snell. That was your mistake.
I know that now. Are you going after him?
You're damn right we are. We want to get Miss Carling and Sinclair away from him, and I got a score to settle with Snell. More than one, in fact.
Take me with you.
It looks like you're wounded.
Grimacing, Corrigan reached across his body with his right hand, grasped his left hand, and tucked it behind his belt.
Yes, but I can ride, and I can fire a pistol, too.
We ain't got time to hold back.
I won't slow you down. Just catch one of the horses for me. I'm ready to go.
The two other soldiers helped each other to their feet.
So are we.
You men are injured.
Well, begging your pardon, Lieutenant, but so are you, and maybe worse than us.
Rip, make sure the rest of these fellows are really dead. I'll round up some horses for the lieutenant and the other two.
Thank you. I don't care how hard it is or how long it takes. I'm going to see to it that Snell and his men are brought to justice.
Once again, the trail wasn't too hard to follow. Snell probably believed that he had wiped out everyone behind him who might give chase. He was going to find out, and soon, Preacher hoped, just how wrong he was about that. After riding for a short distance to the north, the men turned their horses to follow the trail as it curved back to the east, across the burned-out path of the fire. Smoke still rose in the distance to the north, but it wasn't as thick as it had been earlier. The fire was finally dying out. It had probably reached a river or a creek that had halted its progress. The trail continued to turn until the tracks led southeastward.
They're planning on leaving this part of the country behind. Probably heading for St. Louis as fast as they can get there.
Indeed. That's where representatives of Mr. Sinclair's late uncle are waiting.
Yeah, you ain't explained about that yet. Now, who's Sinclair's uncle?
The late Senator Ambrose Sinclair. I'm sure you heard of him.
Nope.
Both Carlin and Hodge had heard of Senator Sinclair, though. They brought their horses alongside Preacher and Court.
Did you just say that Senator Sinclair is Chester's uncle?
Was. He passed away a few weeks ago.
Oh, must have been after we left Boston. I suppose word of his death hadn't gotten to St. Louis before we left there.
Senator Sinclair was one of the richest men in Massachusetts.
Yes, and he left his entire estate to his nephew Chester.
Corrigan went on to tell the others about how the senator and Chester Sinclair's father had been estranged as young men.
This is incredible! And Chester had no idea of these circumstances?
That's my understanding.
Snell's had his sights on kidnapping you, Willard, ever since the rendezvous. But I reckon he's changed his mind now that he knows Sinclair is worth even more. I expect he'll keep Miss Carlin a prisoner until he's forced Sinclair to pay up.
Yes! Chester is enough of a gentleman so that he wouldn't allow a woman to come to harm if he could help it.
Oh, there's a hell of a lot more to it than that. Sinclair's in love with your sister.
What? Chester isn't in love with Faith?
I reckon you just never did see it because you were too busy looking at whatever you were painting.
I never knew. I just never knew.
Sinclair will do anything for Miss Faith, even give up his whole fortune that he didn't know he had.
But that likely won't save her or him. Snow won't want to leave anybody behind to testify against him. As soon as he's gotten what he wants, he'll kill both of them.
We have to stop them.
Yeah, that's what I'm figuring on doing.
Snell kept him moving at a fast pace all day. But at least Faith and Sinclair were mounted this time, instead of being forced to trot on foot as they had been while they were prisoners of the engines. They were exhausted anyway, though, by the time Snell finally called a halt for the night.
You reckon we can have a fire?
No, Vickery. There's too damn many Sioux and Arikara and Pawnee in these parts. Might even be some more Crows come down this way from the north. We ain't taking any chances. It'll be cold camps for us for a while.
Sinclair slid down from the horse first, and then reached up to help Faith dismount. Even under these dire circumstances, he couldn't help but notice the feel of her trim waist under his hands. Snell approached, his hand on the butt of his pistol.
Hardcastle, you and Singletree tie these two up. Sinclair first.
You don't have to do that. We won't try to escape.
You don't expect me to believe that, do you?
Where would we go? I don't know where we are. I wouldn't have any idea how to get to the nearest outpost of civilization. It would be utterly foolish for us to try to escape.
Maybe so. But you're going to be tied up anyway, because I just don't trust you.
Sinclair seethed inwardly as his hands were jerked roughly behind his back and lashed together with rawhide thongs.
At the very least, you don't have to treat Miss Carling this way.
Don't you worry about the lady. She'll be took care of just fine.
Whatever it is you want from me, I promise that I'll never cooperate if you lay one finger on Miss Carling. I'll die first.
Snell gestured to one of his men, who kicked Sinclair's knees out from under and forced him to sit down on the ground next to one of the cottonwoods. Once he was there, a rope was wrapped around his chest and the trunk of a tree, tying him securely to it.
You really don't know why we grabbed you, do you? You ain't got any idea just how rich you really are.
I'm not rich. I'm just Mr. Carling's servant, and trust me, the wages he pays me have never been extravagant.
You damn fool! Your uncle was Senator Ambrose Sinclair.
Chester, did you know anything about that?
I knew that the senator had the same last name, of course, but Sinclair isn't that uncommon a name. My parents never said anything about it.
Those soldier boys came out here looking for you because the senator died and left all his money to you. His friends in the War Department got the army involved. The lieutenant was supposed to take you back to St. Louis and turn you over to the lawyers who represent your uncle's estate. Instead, we're going to take you back. And you're going to be so grateful to us for our help that you're going to have a bunch of money sent to one of the banks there so as you can give it all to us.
What's going to happen if I don't cooperate with you?
Then it'll be too bad for this pretty red-headed gal. Now, I won't lie to you. We're going to be taking turns with her all the way back, so she's going to be pretty hard used by the time we get there. But she'll be alive. You just think on that, Sinclair. She'll be alive. And if you want to keep her that way, you'll do as you're told.
Don't listen to him, Chester. My God, let them go ahead and kill me now. I'd prefer that to the humiliating fate this little toad is describing.
You better watch your mouth, bitch. I want to keep you alive. That don't mean I can't do some carving on you if I have a mind to.
I'm not afraid of you.
Stop it, Faith. Snell, you listen to me.
You ain't in any position to be giving orders, mister.
You have to have my cooperation in order to get your hands on any of that money. I'd say that gives me some say in what happens.
The only thing you got any say in is whether or not this gal lives or dies.
No, that's not true. Unless you cooperate with me, then somewhere on the way back to St. Louis, I'll do something that forces you to kill me. Either that, or I'll leap off a cliff and throw myself into a river, or something else that results in my death. So you listen to me, Snell, and understand, if anything happens to Miss Carling, anything, I'll make sure that you never see a cent of any inheritance I have coming to me. All of you understand that? I'll cooperate freely as long as Miss Carling is completely unharmed.
Well, hell, getting poked ain't gonna harm her.
Shut up, Vickery. I don't like being threatened.
Neither do I, and I won't have Miss Carling threatened either.
You're a damn stubborn bastard, ain't you?
You don't know how stubborn.
The hell with it. Have it your way, Sinclair. Nobody bothers a lady. But make no mistake about this, mister. You better cooperate when we get to St. Louis, or else what those Injuns had planned for this gal would look like a damn picnic in the park compared to what I'll do to her.
Preacher had hoped to catch up to Snell and the others before nightfall, but when it got too dark to continue tracking, he estimated that they were still several hours ahead.
We know where they're going. Why can't we just keep heading in the same direction?
Because we might lose the trail and go right past them in the dark, or else we could stumble into the middle of them and get ourselves killed, not to mention your sister and Sinclair.
That makes sense, I suppose. Still, I hate to think of Faith being in the hands of those barbarians any longer than she has to be.
Yeah, I understand. I reckon we all do. But it'll be a different story tomorrow.
They made a cold camp that night, ate sparingly of the rations they had brought with them from the Sioux village, and then stretched out on the ground to get a little sleep. Preacher and Rip took turns standing guard during the night. No one seemed to feel very rested when they set out again early the next morning before the sun came up, as soon as there was enough gray light in the sky for Preacher to be able to see the tracks left by the horses they were following. The three wounded soldiers began lagging behind, despite Lieutenant Corrigan's promise the day before that they wouldn't hold back the rescue party. Preacher finally had to fall back and speak with Corrigan.
You fellas push on as best you can, but we're going on ahead.
Yes, of course. I understand, Preacher. We'll keep coming along and try to catch up later.
Preacher wheeled his horse and galloped ahead to rejoin Rip, Carling, and Hyde.
Boys, it's just the four of us again. Let's hope that'll be enough.
It was around midday when Carling saw something in the distance.
Oh my God! Look up ahead! Is that them?
Yep. I spotted them a ways back, but didn't want to say anything until I was sure.
What are we stopping for? Shouldn't we be riding even faster so that we can catch up to them?
Out here on these plains, they'd see us coming from a long way. They'd be ready for us before we ever caught up to them. We gotta hang back now, out of sight, until night falls again and they made camp.
And then what?
Then Rip and me'll slip in there and kill all those bastards.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Faith had been tied to one of the trees the night before, just like Sinclair was. And although he had grown angry when she winced in pain as she was lashed to the cottonwood's trunk, at least she hadn't been molested. Sinclair didn't know if his threat would keep her safe all the way to St. Louis. But right now, he was just grateful that they had survived another night with her honor intact, and both of them reasonably healthy. During the day, the group continued traveling southeastward.
We'll hit the Missouri River in a few days, and we can follow it all the way down to St. Louis. Shouldn't take us more than a couple weeks.
We're gonna run short of supplies before then, Luther.
We'll be all right, Baldy. We can do some hunting. In fact, next game we come across, we'll see if we can get us some fresh meat.
A little later on, they spied a herd of antelope about a quarter of a mile away. Snell picked out several of the men and told them to try to bring down a couple of the animals. The men rode off toward the herd. A few minutes later, Sinclair heard the shots as they fired at the fleet-footed beasts. Spooked by the shooting, the antelopes bolted, raising a cloud of dust as they raced off. But two of them were left behind on the ground. Snell's men set to work dressing out the carcasses.
Fresh meat tonight.
Once the men had harvested all the meat they wanted from the slain antelopes, the group pushed on. They made camp beside another stream as evening began to settle down once more over the prairie.
We'll risk a fire, but get that meat cooked in a hurry, because I want the fire out before it gets good and dark.
While Baldy tended to that, Several of the men tied Sinclair and Faith to trees as they had been bound the night before. The smell of the roast and meat made Sinclair's stomach clench tightly, reminding him of just how little he had eaten for days now. It had been barely enough to keep him going. Tonight, though, there was plenty of food. Tied up as they were, Faith and Sinclair couldn't feed themselves, but Snell and Baldy cut off pieces of antelope steak, speared the chunks of meat on their knives, and fed the two prisoners that way. Faith wrinkled her nose a little at the somewhat gamey smell and taste of the meat, but she was hungry enough that it didn't stop her from eating. As Snell had ordered, the fire was extinguished before full darkness fell. Comfortable and with full bellies for the first time in a while, most of the men stretched out on the ground and fell sound asleep in a matter of seconds. Snell was still awake, though, as was the man called Vickery. They had the first guard shift. Even though Snell had mentioned several times that he wasn't worried about anybody coming after him, out here, it was always possible that a wandering band of Injuns would stumble on them. And if that happened, the men would need as much warning as possible so they could fight back. That was the reason for the guards. The moon hadn't risen yet, but there was enough light from the stars for Sinclair to be able to see Faith as she sat on the ground several feet away from him, her back pressed against the tree trunk. Even though she couldn't move very much because of the tightness of her bonds, she shifted around as much as she could, trying to find a comfortable position. Sinclair wished he could take her in his arms and let her rest her head against his shoulder. He was sure both of them would sleep better in each other's embrace. The odds were against them ever getting an opportunity to make that happen, however. Sinclair wanted to stay awake as much as he could, just to make sure that none of the men got any ideas about trying anything with Faith during the night. But weariness stole over him, making his eyelids heavy and forcing his head to droop forward until his chin rested on his chest. But Sinclair came instantly awake when he suddenly felt the kiss of cold steel against the skin of his wrists. Somebody started cutting the rawhide bonds that held him to the tree. The sound of shooting during the afternoon had driven Willard Carling almost into a frenzy.
They could have run into more Indians! We ought to go and see! They may need our help! Faith could be getting scalped right now!
Now take it easy. I've heard the shots from plenty of battles in my times, and that don't sound like one to me. More likely they're doing some hunting.
Hunting?
Yeah, they're probably running short on supplies just like us. Could be they came across a herd of buffalo or antelope and went after some fresh meat.
You really think so?
Yeah. Listen, the shooting's already stopped.
What should we do now?
The rest of you stay here. I'll get close enough to take a look and make sure there isn't any trouble.
While Rip and the two Easterners waited, Preacher dismounted and scouted ahead on foot, dropping to hands and knees and crawling when he was close enough so that Snell's bunch might have spotted him otherwise. He worked his way close enough to see several of Snell's men skinning and dressing out the carcasses of a couple of antelope. He and Rip had guessed correctly. Preacher returned and reported what he had seen.
Did you see Faith? Could you tell if she was all right?
Her and Sinclair were riding double. Looked like their hands were tied, but as far as I could tell, they both seemed to be fine other than that.
Oh, thank God.
It's good that they shot them antelope.
Yep.
Why? What does it matter?
Because tonight when they stop to make camp, they'll likely cook some steaks and have themselves a little feast. Man with a full belly sleeps sounder than one who's on short rations.
They continued following the larger group of riders. At dusk, the smell of roast and meat drifted to their nostrils. Preacher and Rip exchanged grins.
Oh, goodness, that smells delicious. I hadn't realized how hungry I was until I caught a whiff of those, what did you call them, antelope steaks?
Yeah, that's it.
And if we're lucky, it'll be the last meal for those old boys.
A few minutes later, Preacher stopped the group.
This'll be our spot, boys. Now we wait.
Time dragged by as the sunset glow faded from the sky. Stars began to appear in the deep blue-black vault of the heavens. Darkness cloaked the landscape, and still Preacher waited.
All right, here's what we'll do. Rip and I'll go in first, being mighty quiet about it. Try to get to Sinclair and Miss Faith before anybody knows we're there. We'll cut them loose and send them out of the camp before we open up on Snell and his pards. When you fellas hear the shots, you come charging in on horseback. You'll be leading the other two horses, and come a-shooting. But make sure you know who you're shooting at before you pull the triggers.
Can't we just try to free Sinclair and Miss Carling without killing all those men?
No. If we leave them alive, they'll be right behind us on our trail, just itching to kill us. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm getting goddamn tired of messing with them. They opened this ball. They can damn well dance to the tune they called.
Damn right.
I agree. These are evil men, Jasper, and I, for one, intend to deal with them in the manner in which they should be dealt.
You got more sand than I gave you credit for, Willard. I reckon you'll do.
Jasper and I will be ready when the time comes for us to make our move, Preacher. You can count on us.
Yeah, I believe we can. Let's go, Rip.
Preacher and Rip stole off into the darkness, heading for the camp on the bank of the stream. They worked their way around so that they could approach the place from downwind. The fire had been out for hours, but a faint mingled scent of burning wood and roasted meat lingered on the night breeze. Preacher and Rip moved in utter silence, not needing to talk to know what they were doing. Both men had crept through the night, intent on dealing death on other occasions. Finally, they split up, moving through the tall grass about 10 yards apart, with such stealth that it appeared the blades were simply rustling in that breeze. Preacher raised his head enough to get a look at the camp in the starlight. He located the trees where Sinclair and Faith were tied and pointed them out silently to Rip. Then they resumed their slow, careful approach. Preacher drew his knife from its sheath. He was behind the tree where Sinclair was tied. He reached it and began to saw through the rawhide bonds.
It's Preacher. When I tell you, you get up, grab Miss Faith, and run. Get across the stream if you can, and stay low. Blood's gonna be flying.
I can stay and fight.
No, get the girl and get out of here.
Preacher glanced over at the tree where Faith was tied. He couldn't see Rip because his fellow frontiersman was on the other side of the tree. Faith was sitting up straighter now and seemed to be wide awake, although it was difficult to be sure in the dim light. Preacher sheathed his knife and stood up, staying as close to the tree trunk as he could so that he would blend in with its shadow. He wrapped his fingers around the butts of his pistols and pulled them from behind his belt. With his thumbs looped over the hammers, he looked at Sinclair.
Go!
Sinclair lunged upright, leaped across to the other tree, and grabbed Faith as she shook off the bonds that Rip had just cut.
Hey!
One of Snell's men surged up off the ground as Faith and Sinclair splashed into the shallow stream.
They're getting away!
Preacher stepped away from the tree and leveled his right-hand pistol. Vickery was dead instantly. Rip added his hardware to the fray. Collins went down. Preacher swung to his left and lifted the pistol in that hand. Two more of Snell's men had jumped up in alarm and were dumb enough to be standing close together. Preacher dropped the empty pistols and yanked out knife and tomahawk as Rip worked his second gun. Work, Preacher slashed a man's throat and caved in another skull with the tomahawk. At that moment, four horses raced into the camp, two being ridden by Willard Carling and Jasper Hodge, the other two being led by the Easterners. Several of Snell's men had to leap aside to avoid being trampled. Carling shot one of them and kicked another in the chest.
God damn it!
Preacher didn't know how many of the enemy were left, but a couple of the men broke and ran, terrified by this unexpected bloody raid out of the darkness. Preacher didn't think either one of them were Luther Snell, so he was willing to let them go. They didn't go far, though. Preacher lifted his tomahawk, ready to throw it, as three men suddenly rode into the camp. He relaxed a little when he recognized them as Lieutenant Corrigan and the two wounded soldiers, who had finally caught up with Preacher and the others just in time to cut down the fleeing men.
Where's Sinclair?
Where's Faith?
Shit, there's Faith!
Preacher was closest to the stream. He splashed across it and saw a couple of figures lunging around as they struggled desperately with each other. It was Snell and Chester Sinclair.
I'll kill you. I'll kill you both.
Willard Carling ran past Preacher.
Faith! Faith!
Willard!
Faith was sprawled on the ground not far from Sinclair and Snell. Carling dashed over to her and caught her up in his arms. Preacher warily circled the battling men. He couldn't risk a throw with his knife or tomahawk for fear of hitting Sinclair. The Easterner was bigger than Snell, but he wasn't as experienced, and he didn't fight with the same sort of maniacal fury as the smaller man. Starlight suddenly flashed on Steve. Preacher saw Sinclair wince in pain and stagger back a step as Snell ripped a blade free. Sinclair lost his balance and fell. Snell loomed over Sinclair, ready to strike again. Suddenly, Preacher stepped in front of him.
Adios, Luther.
Preacher let go of the tomahawk and stepped back. Snell stood where he was for a second, twitching as the rest of his body caught up to the fact that he was dead. Then he folded up like a rag doll. Preacher turned away. He had felt an instant of fierce satisfaction as he avenged the death of Mountain Mist, but that was over now. He had other things to worry about. Kneeling next to Chester Sinclair, he helped the Big Easterner sit up.
How bad did it get you?
Not too bad, I don't think. Faith, it's Faith!
I'm here, darling.
Faith put her arms around Sinclair and hugged him close.
God, Chester, don't you die on me. Don't you dare die on me.
I don't reckon you'll get rid of me that easy.
You'll be all right, Chester.
Preacher got up and turned back toward the others, who had all come across the creek from the corpse-littered camp.
They're all dead, Preacher. You reckon it's really over this time, or will we have to fight some Injuns a time or two before we get to wherever we're going?
Hell, I don't even know where we're going.
In the end, they went to St. Louis because Lieutenant Corrigan insisted on it. But that wasn't until they had buried Snell and the other dead men and spent several days camped a short distance downstream from the site of the battle, allowing the wounded members of the party to heal a little before resuming their journey. Chester Sinclair had a deep gash in his side, but with Faith nursing him night and day, Preacher had little doubt that Sinclair was going to be just fine. The same held true for Corrigan and the two soldiers, although they didn't get the same sort of love and care that Sinclair did. When Corrigan started making noises about doing his duty and delivering Sinclair to St. Louis, Sinclair put a stop to it in a hurry.
I don't want to go, but I will. I'll meet with my uncle's lawyers and sign anything they need me to sign, but I'm not staying in St. Louis, and I'm not going back to Boston.
Then what are you gonna do?
I'm coming back out here.
That's a splendid idea. While I'm in St. Louis, I'm going to outfit a whole new expedition, since I didn't get to finish the first one. Chester, I'll still need an assistant. No, wait a moment. You're a rich man now, I hear. I don't suppose you'll want to be my assistant anymore?
No, but I could be your partner. I'll furnish all the supplies, and you can furnish the talent, Willard.
It's a deal.
Neither of you have asked my opinion about this.
I really want to go back to the mountains, Faith. But I suppose if you have your heart set on returning to Boston...
I'd prefer not to live in the wilderness permanently. But after everything that's happened, I think I can manage for a while longer.
How about you, Mr. Hodge? You going back to the mountains with the rest of us?
Oh, good Lord, no, Mr. Giddens. I already have more than enough material for the book I plan to write. The sooner I put this savage country behind me, the better. A savage country? You know, that might just work as the title of my book.
You'll come with us, won't you, Preacher?
Yeah, I believe I will. Somebody's got to come along and keep you folks out of trouble.
Seems to me like you're the one trouble's falling around, Preacher. Pops up pert near everywhere you go.
It does, don't it?
Preacher stared at the ruins of the Teton Sioux village some 2 months later. Lieutenant Corrigan had told him about how the soldiers, along with Snell's men, had attacked the place and killed Badger and the rest of the warriors. Preacher wanted to hate Corrigan for after that, but the lieutenant had been taken in by Luther Snell. Corrigan had been duped, but he wasn't evil. Preacher was glad, though, when the young officer stayed in St. Louis. Corrigan had some more growing up to do before he would be ready for another assignment on the frontier. Preacher hoped his superior officers had the sense to see that. Willard Carling was painting a picture of the remains of the destroyed village.
That's a mighty fine painting, Willard.
I want people to see this for themselves. It's the beginning of the end for the Sioux and all the other red men, isn't it, Preacher?
Yeah, more than likely. This is a mighty big country. It ought to be big enough for everybody, but you can already see signs that ain't the way it's gonna be.
A vanished way of life. But I'm going to capture as much of it as I can, so that people won't completely forget it.
That struck Preacher as a good thing to do. But the best thing that came out of his return to this scene of so much tragedy and death was his reunion with Horse and Dog, because both animals had been waiting for him. They had been living off the land for a couple of months, but they were both fat and happy since it was summer and the grass and rabbits were plentiful. One evening, as the sun was going down, Preacher climbed to the top of a small hill overlooking the camp that had been set up down below. He saw Faith and Sinclair laughing together and saw Willard Carling standing in front of a canvas propped on an easel, hard at work on a landscape depicting a setting sun over the rugged, beautiful mountains. Preacher sat down on a rock and Dog sat on the ground beside him. He scratched behind the big cur's ears.
Well, old Dog, I guess we'll stick with these folks for the rest of the summer, but come fall, they'll be heading back to St. Louis and Boston. Face already started talking about a wedding sometime during the winter. Sinclair sure ain't disagreeing with her. They're gonna have to make their way back without us, though. I missed most of the spring trapping season, but I'll be damned if I'll miss the one this fall.
Preacher wouldn't say it out loud to Dog, but he'd been pondering on what Rip had said about trouble following him around. His mind went back over the years, and he knew it was true. Ever since the night he had slipped out of his folks' house back on the farm and started walking away from that settled life, he had seen more trouble, more blood and death than most men would see in several lifetimes. And as he gazed off into the evening shadows, he seemed to see even more ahead of him. Phantom images danced in those shadows. Beautiful women, evil men. Stalwart friends, those who would betray him. Good and bad, hope and despair, love and death. And always, always in those fading shadows, the blaze of guns.
Yeah, you're right, Dog. About time for supper. Yep. Ah.
Preacher stood, and together, he and Dog went back down the hill. First Mountain Man 13, Preacher's Quest, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Johann Detweiler, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Annette Savard, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Eric Mesner, Anthony Penny, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, James Lewis, and Karen Carbone. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supain. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Musical score composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Preacher's Quest, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, and Eagle series, available from Graphic Audio and Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles. We appreciate it.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Do not go out after dark. That is when the beast will hunt.
Gregor says there was something lurking in the darkness tonight. Something that was hunting.
Shh.
What?
Listen.
Congratulations, Miss Creed.
What do you want from me?
Right this way, my dear.
Help me, please!
If I die inside there, Bob goes free.
Of course.
I want that sword.
The sword stays with me. That's my final offer.
Here's my counteroffer. The sword, Anya. Now.
Rogue Angel number 12, The Soul Stealer, from Graphic Audio.
Concentrate. Concentrate. And visualize a storm.
Graphic Audio presents...
What? What is this storm?
DC Comics.
This is a code A emergency. Do you copy?
Justice League of America. Superman. The never-ending battle.
There is power that not even they can overcome.
Where is he?
I have my own reserves, fool!
Hello, Superman. If you can still hear this, you are in the final moments of your life.
Copyright 2008 DC Comics. Justice League of America, Superman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics 2008. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net.